So my name is Stacey Clark O'Hara, and I lead the diversity and inclusion work as well as the Juniper Foundation at Juniper Networks. And I'm going to be your MC for today's session. And I'm just so thrilled to see all of you here today to support and advance women's leadership, especially young women's leadership as well. So Juniper's a networking company. And we do all sorts of things to bring simplicity to the network. The technology that you're using on your phone is networking equipment, and all that comes through your phone. So we're a company of innovators, but I'm not here to talk about Juniper. I'm here to introduce our amazing speaker that we have today. So thank you all for participating in this breakout session. Everybody is beautiful. A healthy self-image for all shapes and sizes. And we have an amazing hour in store for all of you. So now I'm so excited to introduce Jessamine Stanley. Jessamine is one of the truly influential voices advocating for body positivity. And she doesn't fit the cookie cutter version of a stereotypical woman practicing yoga. Jessamine is an internationally recognized yoga teacher and award-winning Instagram star, and she is on a mission to create more love and self-acceptance. Everybody Yoga is part memoir and part yoga for beginners, and her mission is to get everyone off the couch and onto the mat, and she wants yoga to be accessible to those who need it most. So please put your hands together for the one and only Jessamine Stanley.
Thank you, Stacey. That was very, very generous of you. Probably excessively generous. What's up, y'all? I'm Jessamine. I brought my friends, obviously. It's like pack the crowd, make sure I get at least one laugh. So I think that typically whenever people see me and they see me practicing yoga and or like taking photos of myself naked or half naked, they're like, wow, she must have figured it all out. Like, if this fat black person is okay putting pictures of themselves on the internet, like, she must know like the key to everything. Because the reality of the situation is that, I mean, I don't even need to do a hand-raising thing here. Most people have some kind of issue with their body, whether it's your nose, your waist, your eyebrows, your thighs, something. And it's not like a gendered issue. This extends across all human beings. And definitely people who, one of the many groups of people that is persecuted for the way that they look are definitely fat-bodied people. And when you see a fat-bodied person who has determined, like, I'm not going to live beneath this sensation anymore. I'm not going to live beneath the beliefs of others. I'm going to choose to love myself. You're thinking, like, is it the yoga, or like, does she say something every day to make it happen? Like, how does that happen? So I'm imagining that at least a couple of people are in here thinking, like, I'm gonna walk out of this with the key to life, like the mantra that you say every morning or that magic thing. And I'm saying this now because you're going to be deeply disappointed if this is why you're here. I don't have that key. I don't have the secret mantra. I don't even know that yoga is directly linked to having a body positive relationship with yourself. But I do know what happened to me. So I'm going to give you a little bit more information about my story, talk to you about what body positivity actually is, and then see where we are on the other end of that. So I started practicing yoga when I was in graduate school, and I was going through a period of depression that, frankly, is like pretty common if you go to graduate school. So like if you did that at one point in your life, then you know what I'm talking about. This pit of despair and confusion and complete lack of knowledge about who you are. But I found myself walking down that path. And I talk about this a little bit in my book, Everybody Yoga, actually. So I'm not going to go into all the details of it. But if you're curious and you want to hear me cry on paper, then please go for it. But basically, one of my classmates was practicing Bikram yoga at the time. And Bikram has kind of like a, I don't want to throw shade on cults, so know that I'm saying this with a positive feeling, but like, it's kind of a cult, right? So she's like, drank the Bikram Kool-Aid, and she's like, oh my God, Jasmine, you're going to love it. It's going to change your whole life. Yoga's amazing. And I was very apprehensive because, sidebar, I'd actually tried Bikram yoga once when I was in high school. So some of y'all are in high school, I think. I was like 16 when this happened. So my aunt was really into Bikram yoga at the time. She had also consumed quite a bit of the Kool-Aid, and she was like, oh my God, Jasmine, you're gonna love it, change your life. And I was like, I mean, I'm 16, I'm fat, I got nothing better to do this summer. Why not go to this hot yoga class? So I went, and I remember walking into the room. It's literally like having a hot, funky washcloth just like trapped across your face. Because if you've never practiced Bikram yoga before, it's a style of hot yoga. It's practiced in a room that's about 100 to 104 degrees, depending on where you are exactly. It's the same 26 postures practiced 2 times over a 90-minute period. It's very physically intense. And therefore, there's a lot of sweating. And there's almost always carpeting in Bikram studios, so like all of the carpeting has soaked up that sweat. So it is ripe, y'all. Like it is, and that's like, you walk in, it's immediately funky, and then on top of that, you're sweating from every place that human beings sweat. Like I was sweating in places that I really didn't know you could sweat. Like your eyebrows, the backs of my elbow, backs of my elbows, backs of my knees. And this is before anything has actually happened. This is just walking into the room. And so Bikram classes start with pretty intense pranayama breath work. It's intense even for people who have been practicing it for a long time. And for a non-practitioner, for someone who maybe has always feared highly athletic activities, it was kind of a nightmare. And also everyone in Bikram Studios is like trying to compete with each other a little bit. So there's a lot of people like doing like, I'm doing my best breath work. And they're just like, ah, making these like huge faces. And I was just like, what? And so I'll be generous and say I made it like a third of the way through before I was like, I've had enough of this. I don't need to do this anymore. I'm done. And they tell you not to walk out of a Bikram studio because blah, blah, blah. But I was like, these people don't know me. I've got to get out of here. I cannot be in here. So I walk out of the room, immediately felt amazing because there was air conditioning. And I was like, what was wrong before? I don't know. Let me go back into the studio. And I went back in and I immediately learned why you're not supposed to do that, because the temperature shift in your body going from 104 degrees to like 70 degrees, it's no good, right? There's lots of things that can happen. For me, I got really, really nauseous. And after that, I left. I was like, I'm never doing this again. I see what yoga is. So cut back to like, I'm in grad school. My friend is like, try yoga. I was like, bitch, no. Are you kidding me? Like, I already know what this is about. I know it's gonna be dumb. Like, it's not for me. And she wore me down because they had a Groupon pass. So it was one of those things like, what's the worst that could happen? You spend $30, you go once, it's fine. But I went back and I loved it. And this is the thing. It's kind of key that like, it was the exact same style of yoga because it was still hot as hell, still hard. Everything seemed impossible. But what I didn't realize is that in my day-to-day life, I really was not pushing myself outside of any kind of boundary. It's like, wake up, go to work, go to class, have the same conversations over and over again, totally not engaged with anything emotionally, go to sleep, wake up, do the exact same thing over again. That's equivalent of sleepwalking. I was essentially just sleepwalking through life. You may have experienced this. When I was in a yoga studio, that kind of attitude is completely impossible. There's no way to be able to even sustain yourself in the heat if you're sleepwalking. It wakes you up. And when you're woken up, it pushes you up to this boundary to see who you actually are. Now, I know this sounds like kind of esoteric and weird, and you're like, what's she talking about? See who you really are. Let me give you an example. So pretty early in the Bikram sequence, there is a variation on chair pose called awkward pose, which is pretty fitting, actually, when you think about it. But I'm going to give you an example. So practice awkward pose, coming like right here. I'm come to the side so you can see me. Your arms are extended out. You come up onto the balls of your feet. Yes, in cowboy boots. Bend your knees, sink the hips deep. I'm making this look so much easier than it is, because the first time that I ever practiced this pose, I legit like put my arms up, came up onto the balls of my feet, and they immediately fell over. And the thing about that is, I'm really hard on myself. I don't know if any of y'all are really hard on yourselves, but I would immediately just start beating myself up. Like, I'm not good enough. I shouldn't even come here. Everyone else can do it. Why can't I do it? It's not like these are foreign ideas also. This is the same thing that I do at that point that I did in school, that I do at work, that I do in relationships. Immediately coming to my offense, always being the person who is saying the worst thing about myself. And the thing that makes it even more intense is that in a Bikram studio, you're literally facing a wall of mirrors. The whole idea is that by looking into your own eyes while you're practicing, that you are looking into the eyes of your one true teacher. But as a fat-bodied person, I've spent my entire life avoiding mirrors, like trying not to look at myself. And the idea of just staring at myself for the whole time was bad enough. But having that conversation with myself where I'm like saying these awful things, you shouldn't have come, you can't do this, you're not good enough, and actually watching myself and seeing that I'm saying those things, it's like a wake-up call. And you come to that wall and you say, so are you gonna talk shit about yourself the whole time? Or like, are you gonna practice yoga? Because you paid for this class, so you could just try it. Yeah, you might fall down. You might not be as good as everyone else in the room, but you could just try. And just try was like a brand new concept to me. The idea of just doing something, not because I thought that I was gonna be good at it, not because I thought that I could impress someone, but just because I'm gonna try, it totally reshaped my life. Not just on a yoga mat. I mean, this is something, yes, it comes up with awkward pose and dancer pose and all of these shapes that maybe you've seen on the internet and it's like, oh yeah, this is a great thing to aim for. But that's not even really the work of it. It's when you see how that idea of try shows up in other moments, how it shows up at school, it shows up at work, it's in every relationship, every interaction. And ultimately for me, that sensation of pushing to the wall and going beyond to see who I am, that's why I keep showing up for this practice. You notice here that aside from like the whole mirror conversation, I'm not really talking about my physical body that much. That's why I don't know if I would necessarily directly link yoga to having a better relationship with your body. When I started to, take photographs of my yoga practice, I started taking photos of my practice back whenever Instagram was like not as popular as it is now. Now everyone and their mom is on that site. But like back in the day, it was in the day, I mean like 6 years ago, it was like a bunch of college kids and yoga practitioners, yes, but only very serious practitioners and teachers. And basically everyone was like photographing and sharing their practices so that you could feel a connection to one another, feel a connection to something bigger than yourself, to be tied into a yoga community. So I would take these photos of myself, and when I would take the photo, in the moment, I'd be like, oh my God, yoga's amazing. I love this universe. Everything's great. And then I would go and look at the picture, and I would immediately start saying awful things about myself. Be like, oh my God, my stomach. Oh, my arms. Oh, yeah. Everything about this picture is bad. I would like angle the camera so that I would avoid looking at certain parts of my body. And this went on for a really long time. And after a while, I noticed like, why are you your own worst enemy? Why are you, there's no one else here saying these awful things about yourself. You know, we always want to blame, like when people talk about body image, we always want to point to the media. We want to point to magazines and movies and celebrities and all of this. That's not what really makes a difference. The thing that really shows up is what you are saying about yourself. And yeah, you might be repeating things that you hear from your lovers, from your friends, from your parents, from people who are closest to you, but it's coming out of your mouth. And I catch myself just saying horrible things about myself. And after a while, I was like, so you could just choose to see this differently. Like you could, when you look at the photo, not immediately jump to saying horrible things about yourself. I think that that kind of self-reflection, actually hearing the things that we truly believe about ourselves, that is how you have a better relationship with your body. There are people who will say, like, say this mantra, or, you know, and I'm not even saying, like, yeah, I'm talking about taking pictures, but I'm not saying that you need to go out and start an Instagram where you specifically put pictures of yourself, because if you want to have a conversation about that, maybe that'll come up in the Q&A. I have a completely different ball of feelings about that. But if you want to have a better relationship with yourself, you have to actually hear the things that you're saying about yourself and acknowledge that the enemy that you may want to point a finger at is looking right at you in the mirror. I say this because it's not just about ourselves, right? The things that we believe and the things that we say reflect onto other people. And frankly, I don't really care that much about other people my age. I'm really thinking about people who are younger than I am. And the place that I really see the horrible ideas that our society has manifested about body image is in children. That they are believing the things that we say about ourselves. They're hearing that, and then they're putting them onto themselves. And so I feel like if you have a better relationship with yourself, and you can reflect that journey to others, that if you need a motivation point, that's your motivation. There's also a question, because I can understand how someone could hear all of this and be like, yeah, I don't care. She's talking about yoga and like, feeling good about yourself and good body image and all of this, but like, I don't really care. Who cares? It's not that important. Okay. I see that. I hear that. Then how are you gonna do anything else? If you're out here can't even be happy with yourself, how are you gonna do any of the work that you need to do? I don't say this to be political at all, but we're living in a time of complete and utter chaos. So much shit is happening every single day, and the only way that we can be present and awake for the different things that are gonna come up is if we're taking care of ourselves. And the first line of defense to taking care of yourself is to really value what's happening inside over what you're projecting to other people on the outside. We spend so much time trying to make our bodies look a certain way for other people, trying to have certain clothes for other people, wear makeup for other people. But if we don't take care of ourselves, we cannot stand strong. We can't stand and defend ourselves, our communities. This is imperative. Ultimately, self-care, having a better body image, it's an act of defiance. It's an act of rebellion. It's a revolution. And then, yeah, there's the external evolution. But there's also this really insane work that can happen inside as well. There are a lot of ways to do all of this work within the self. The way that I've chosen is yoga. And in fairness to others, I'm going to give a story from my own life. This is actually the last story that I tell in the book, Everybody Yoga. When I did my yoga teacher training, everybody was crying. Crying was like the requisite for being in the room, because you're practicing yoga for hours a day. You're building this fire within yourself. In yoga, the fire is called tapas. It's the fire that burns away the pieces of yourself that don't need to be there. And that fire can bring up a lot of emotions. But I don't come from the kind of family where you cry about stuff. Like, that's not a thing. If you're crying, you're hiding it. And if anybody sees you, it better be because somebody died. There's no other excuse for crying. And so I was looking at people like, are we crying about yoga now? Like, is this the thing? Really? What? And we were about 2 weeks into the program, and we were doing this partner yoga exercise. I was partnered with somebody who is a lot smaller than I am. She's like 5 foot tall, so I guess however much you weigh when you're 5 feet tall, I'm me. We're standing next to each other, and just the idea of putting my entire body weight onto this tiny person was horrifying to me. I was panicked. So I'm in there like, oh my God, if I even touch her, I might break her, blah, blah. It seems crazy, but like these are things that, I mean, like, if you're fat, you know what I'm talking about. Like, you sit next to a person, you're afraid that you're going to hurt them just by sitting next to them. You look in the mirror, you're afraid that something's going to happen. It's a real thing. Anyway, so I was afraid to just even lean on her. And through the whole exercise, every time that I put my body weight on her, I would apologize. I'd be like, oh, I'm sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. I compulsively apologize. I think it's a Southern thing, actually, but it's for whatever reason. Apologizing. And she stopped me at one point and literally like put her hands on my shoulders and was like, you do know you don't have to apologize for everything, right? And I laughed because laughing is my defense mechanism. And I was like, oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I guess I'm just apologizing for existing. What? You're apologizing for existing? This is now I'm me inside of me, right? It's like a very subliminal experience that we're having here, y'all. So I was literally like, you're apologizing for existing? How long have you been thinking that? How long have you been feeling as though you need to apologize for existing? Where else is this showing up? This isn't the sort of thing that like, oh yeah, I just woke up one day and decided to feel that way. This is something that I've been thinking for years, possibly my entire life. I was shook in a way that I have never, that up until that point, I had never been shook before. And I just started crying. And I cried through the rest of the practice. I cried through Shavasana, our final rest. I got in my car and I cried. And again, everyone was crying, so it wasn't like, why is this person crying? But I'm not saying this to say like, yeah, and then the moral of the story is I never apologize for anything ever again because yoga is amazing and I figured it all out. No, I still compulsively apologize for things. I still reside in that space of thinking. But to have that uncovered, it was like having the foggiest mirror, looking through the foggiest mirror your whole life, and then having for a moment that just a slash through the fog and you see the truth. And we build up so many fortresses within ourselves to hide the truth. And there's a million and one reasons to do that. Trauma is real. Pain is real. But being able to look beneath that and to accept that, the things that we can do, the mountains that we can move, the decisions that we can make, the change that we can make, it's beyond comprehension. And to me, that's the reason to do it, to see this truth, so that we can shine that truth to others, so that we can reshape the world that we live in. Now, I'm talking about really big things, and I know that y'all are probably like, So, like, should I go get a yoga mat now? Take pictures of myself? Like, I don't know. What's the next move, Jessamyn? There's no perfect next move. Whatever your next move is will be perfect. But if I could say anything to walk away, like, I would like for you to please do this when you leave. Value your spiritual and emotional body above all else. I'm not saying this, like, go out and join a yoga cult or any kind of cult or anything about religion or anything like that. But value this space within yourself that is connected by oxygen to all other creatures above everything else. So that as you start to prioritize your spiritual body, that can allow you to know the next step of what you should do. Next, mindfulness. Low-key, mindfulness has become so trendy. Like, everyone's like, mindfulness, blah, blah, blah. And I know that it's kind of turning into a thing where you're like, what is this, right? Like, what does it actually mean? Mindfulness is basically saying, this moment is dope, I'm gonna stay in this moment. That's it. That's the whole thing. It's saying, I'm not going to worry about the future. I'm not gonna obsess over the past. If you're a person with anxiety, I have really bad anxiety, then you know that that's like a constant obsessive thing. It's staying in this moment. If you can take even 5 minutes out of your day, I promise you, you got 5 minutes for this. 5 minutes of mindfulness will lead you to the next step. Because frankly, if we can't appreciate this moment, how can we even be prepared for the next moment? And the third thing that if you could leave here doing something, practicing something, please love yourself before anyone else. I spent, have spent, continue to spend so much time trying to be somebody else for somebody else. Trying to be a lover, trying to be a partner, a coworker for a very long time, a student, trying to be someone's child. Perhaps you have a child, you are their parent. There's so many different roles that we play for other people and so many other people that we put ahead of ourselves. But if we don't take care of ourselves, how can we do anything else? Just make a list of the top three people in your life. Try to find yourself at the top of that list. And I promise you, it's not about going out and getting a yoga mat. I don't care if you ever practice yoga. That's not really important to me. If you do want to practice yoga, buy Everybody Yoga, Let Go of Fear, Get on the Mat, Love Your Body. You'll have all the tools in that book. That was for Workman Publishing. Because again, I don't really care. Practice, don't practice. But try to find a way to love yourself, please. I say this on behalf of the other people in your life. Because if you love yourself, you can be everything that you need to be. There are a lot of things that I didn't talk about, like everything really. So if you have, or perhaps something that I said sprung up a question for you. If you have any questions, there are microphones here where you can come along and ask your question. And I'm gonna do a little shoulder shimmy dance so you stand up. Don't be afraid. Oh, here and here. I told you there's gonna be shoulder shimmy dancing.
How do you deal with judgment from other people?
Man. So, where do you even start? I feel like always compelled to give kind of like a bullshit answer, right? I always feel like I want to be like, just don't listen to other people because it doesn't matter. But like, that's not real, right? Yeah. You know that's not real. And I have been bullied to some degree essentially my entire life, especially when I was in middle and high school. And now being on the internet, it's like the most ripe ground to give every opinion that you have about another person. And so I understand that it can be really difficult to just be like, I don't care. But ultimately, that's what you have to do. And to me, when I experience judgment from other people, I always try to understand where that judgment is coming from. And I always feel like we only judge others based out of judgments from ourselves, judgments that we make about ourselves. And more often than not, if someone says something to me that's like really rude or harsh or inappropriate, it's because it's something that they think about themselves. And this is something that is especially borne out by internet trolling, because you have the freedom to say whatever you want and there's no repercussions whatsoever. And it also means that the dagger can slice when you least expect it, as the person who's receiving the daggers. And I think that for me, the thing that has been most effective is literally ignoring things. And I know that I hate to give this answer because I think that it sounds easier than it actually is. It is a lot of work. It means that I don't read comments. It means that I don't engage in person or otherwise with people that I don't know. It means that I very limit my friend group. It means that I'm not as available to the universe as I guess I could be. And it's because I really want to be protected from the influences of other people. Because as much as I know that I know where the judgment is coming from, and sometimes people give like criticism that is very helpful and useful and worthwhile to hear, but that receiving all of that energy is just very, very, I find it to be very difficult. And the only way that I found to really handle it is to just ignore and to shelter. And yeah.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. I hope that answered your question. Hello.
I have a question. So there is a, you always noticed you were talking about that there is a talk going on in your head all the time. It's like you are evaluating yourself, you're comparing yourself, and you're talking to yourself. And most of my life, I figured I was not even aware of it. Unless something, you know, blasts away or the talk becomes so intense, you can't just handle it. So I'm still aware of it. It comes, and I'm aware of it. Like, you kind of make stories about future and, you know, what you're going to do. Have you found a technique to kind of just be at ease and relax, to even be aware that that thing is going on? Because I think once you are aware of it, you can let it go. Because that's the only way to kind of make
Absolutely.
It happen.
And especially whenever it's like, not to just put my stuff onto your stuff, but I always experience this as like, I'm doing it so much that I don't even notice. That's why I don't notice it, because it's such a huge part of who I even am. It's a part of my narrative.
It's like you're living in your head.
Exactly.
You're not even living.
Exactly. I mean, the weird thing is that as much as, so this happens for me, like even when I'm just walking around, it especially can be intense when I'm quiet. But for me, actually just allowing myself to hear everything, and when the way for me to do this is through meditation, because a lot of times whenever people talk about meditation, I think it seems like you're supposed to be finding a quiet place. But I experience it as just let all the sound happen, let all the talking happen, all of this like obsessive list making and note making and running back over everything that happened the day before or the moment before or the year before or whatever. Just let it all run. Don't give yourself, because a lot of, again, this is just my own experience, but a lot of the reason why I can't handle it just walking around is because I'm trying to tell myself that I shouldn't, you shouldn't be thinking about this. You shouldn't be focusing on this. But just saying, just let it happen. Let it be. Because I might be obsessing over it for like 15 minutes, 20 minutes in silence. But when I give myself the space to just experience that obsession, inevitably I stop thinking about it. Because you can't obsess over it forever.
I think two things I found is you are resisting it. That makes it more like compulsive. And if you are like, if you're saying that the don't think about monkeys, the monkeys will come.
Right.
And the second thing is, if you are interested in the talk which is going on in your head, you will kind of follow it. So those are the two things. Like, if you're interested in what you're making out of it, the future even. The reality is there is no future. It's just one possibility which you are thinking about. But if you just don't think about, let it happen, whatever happens, then it will make easier to live in the present. I don't know.
Totally. I mean, I feel like that's the conclusion ultimately that you're coming to.
Yeah. Be relaxed and be okay with whatever you are right now. Because if you kind of think about million things, it'll just crack your head. I mean, that's what happens with me, because it's too much thinking that it just never stops. But once I realize it's too much going on, just being aware of it just helps a lot.
Exactly.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Hi. You're awesome, by the way.
You're awesome.
My question is more with spirituality and meditating. For a moment I thought it was, we were like bougie people who had a lot of time on their hand and like they were just meditating all day. Until I recently went to North Carolina to visit my brother, and there's really not a lot of things to do there. So I was with my thoughts for a long time and not doing anything. And I was kinda getting desperate because it's just like I don't have anything to do, and I'm a person that is always on the go. And so I said to myself, why can't I just be calm for a minute? And my family's always crazy, so I think I grew up also that way. So I'm trying to go into more, I just started yoga like 3 weeks ago, like my mat smells brand new still. But what would you say to, like, I don't know how to start, become like spiritual. I feel like, am I going to say my dead grandpa? Like, that's what I thought at the beginning.
Right.
But the more I kind of read or listen to people, but what would you say for someone who wants to start doing that, like meditating and being more spiritual with themselves? Like, how do you start, first of all?
I think that it's like, everyone's always looking for like the one perfect way to do something.
Right.
That there has to be like that door, that teacher, that method. And I mean, the way that I started was just going to classes. And the thing that really kind of turned everything for me was when I started practicing at home and just allowing it to be what I needed for it to be, as opposed to trying to find what someone else had already defined as what they needed. Because you could go into a certain yoga practice. Let's say that you decide you're going to start practicing Ashtanga yoga. It's like a very specific practice. You may start to walk down that road and be like, I'm kind of shaping myself 100% for this practice, as opposed to like trying to look within yourself. I feel like it's better to, if you were going to start with yoga, take a couple classes and then bring it home. And continue to go to classes, but just allowing your body to move at home, trying to find, this is a foreign concept a lot of times, like the idea of literally just letting your body move. Because we spend so much time at computers and in jobs and roles and trying to define ourselves in these really clear ways. But for me, it's about trying to find this primal being within the self. And I don't even think that you necessarily need to go to any kind of class to do this at all. I don't think you necessarily need to like take like even like go on YouTube or find resources or anything. I think you could just start moving your body at home and sitting in silence. And I think that that can lead to doing all kinds of other work, taking classes and reading books and deepening your knowledge of that. But ultimately, it's just getting comfortable with the idea that there is no right or wrong, that there is no black or white, and that you're just existing. But it's impossible to do that when you're still sitting in this idea, like sitting in the roles. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi. Hey. I was wondering, you mentioned like doing things for yourself, and I was wondering how you made the distinction between doing things for yourself and doing them for other people.
It is a case-by-case basis. There is a case-by-case basis. I don't think that, for me, I've ever really been able to define any hard lines, because often I find myself, what my initial motivation may have been is different from what happened at the end of it. I think it's just about actually acknowledging the process instead of just thinking like, oh, I'm doing this for this person, or like, oh, this is because I am this person to so-and-so. It's just like acknowledging that that is even happening is massive, because it is case by case. And sometimes I do think that you could set out with an intention to do something for another person, and then it ends up with a really positive result for yourself. And that it's not even, I don't think it's necessarily like a bad thing to go from that place. But acknowledging the conversation within yourself is the way to acknowledge what you should be doing and what you shouldn't be doing. Does that make sense? Thank you. I'm going to slide to this side and then I'm going to come back. Hello. No, but maybe shouting, or maybe.
So, oh, okay.
There we go.
I have been unhappy with my body image for several years, and I do that projection where, oh, next summer I'll get bikini body. Or do yoga, because like this unattainable view of what I thought yoga was. I picked up your book, and during the time that I picked up your book at Kepler's bookstore in Menlo Park, you were speaking,
oh, yes.
You were wearing a fabulous outfit.
Oh, thank you.
My knees crapped out, and I had to do several knee surgeries. And so I was just like, wow, I will never be able to do yoga. I'm very wrong about that. However, your book showed me that, because you mentioned Chair Yoga by Edel Strad Ronfeld.
Yes.
And that's what I do now, and it's
dope.
It's awesome. So you can do yoga at any time, guys. Any body form is awesome.
Yes. Yeah. Right. Yeah. That's
Hi.
Awesome. Yes. Okay.
So. Positive self-image comes from within us, and we work on ourselves. And I think all of us are in here asking those questions. My question is, how do you, as the person that loves somebody that doesn't have that positive self-image, and you know they're really great, what are the things you can say? Sorry, I'm crying.
Real thing to cry
I just
about,
do that whenever I feel really
emotional
about yeah. something that I feel very confident. You know, I see the positive things in somebody, and I want them to see those things, and I want them to feel those things. And how do you approach that without looking like you're just trying to tell them that they're so great,
right?
And they're like, I don't feel great, or
right.
I don't feel, or I, you know, I struggle with this.
I always come back to like the language that we use about ourselves and then that reflecting onto other people. But I really understand what you're saying, especially if it's with somebody that you love very much and you're like, why can't you see that you're awesome? And I just feel like being emotionally supportive of people comes in a lot of different ways. And it's not even necessarily like directly complimenting them all the time, or like, because that can feel kind of insincere. It's like, well, you know, you would say that, or you have to say that. I feel like it's almost a thing that can't be, it's not a thing that you're going to be able to see, but just trying to be their friend. Like, even if you're their parent or you are their friend, but like really trying to stand beside them in solidarity. And that's more than just like throwing a compliment at someone every once in a while, or like saying the thing that you think that they want to hear. And this is, I'm just speaking as somebody who went through a very, and frankly is still in recovery from, a very long time feeling as though I was completely worthless. And the thing that, especially when I was like 12, 13, when I was really like in the peak of it, I think the thing that I really needed was just someone to just be genuinely my friend. not someone who felt like they had to be friends with me or that they were doing me any kind of favor. Because I think sometimes we don't notice where our intentions are coming from. Sometimes our intentions, and again, only speaking for myself, my intentions can be more self-involved than I believe that they are, and that is actually receptive to somebody else. Really trying to notice the intention and trying to get to a place of authenticity in the friendship. Because I think that when we really reflect love to one another, more than anything, more than just giving what we think we should give or what we think a person needs, we really just try to give the genuine love of friendship, that it can have really tremendous effects. Okay. I hope that answered your question.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi. My question is about what advice or yoga technique will you give to those moments that we have when we have an outburst of anger? We want to kind of smooth ourselves down or...
I mean, I want to paint the picture a little bit so that I know the situation that we're talking about, because I deal with bursts of anger quite a bit. You're at work or at school. Someone is testing your nerves, really pushing against you, and your response, the response that you would like to give is perhaps like shouting profane slurs. Am I giving the right kind of situation?
Yes.
In that situation, silence is the gift of the universe for me. Literally just shut up and go sit in a corner. It's like put yourself in timeout. I feel like you can do that anytime. You can pair it with a pose. Maybe it's child's pose. Like if you're in a space where you can practice, maybe it's child's pose. Maybe it's just lying on your back in corpse pose. Maybe it's maybe standing in mountain pose. But I feel like just taking the time to reconnect with the breath, to connect to this deep inhale through the nose, deep exhale through the nose, like you can count it out. Some people like to be like, oh yeah, 10 breaths, 5 breaths, whatever. I'm not pressed about how long you do it, but I do think that sitting in silence for me is the only way to really cure that, because otherwise I'm just manipulating that energy. Even practicing really hard, like I'm mad, so I'm gonna start doing like sun salutations or whatever. That might make you more mad, actually. It might make you, like, you're bringing a lot of heat into your body. It might do a lot. I feel like silence can work wonders.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi.
Hello.
So as someone with anxiety and body image issues, or even just as a woman of color, how do you stop yourself from like comparing or feeling like you have to prove yourself to like family or your culture or to society or just everyone around you?
Man, what's interesting is that I really grew up in a family where with a lot of curvy Black women, like it was not seen as bad to be curvy. But my mom has so many internalized issues about herself that it's only been in my adulthood that I've really noticed like how much of her stuff she puts onto me. And it's not intentional. And it's not the kind of thing where like I feel like she and I need to have a conversation about it. I do think that there are situations where I've never been in one of these situations, but I can imagine wanting to have an actual conversation with your family or with your partner or husband, wife, whoever. But I feel like it's just noticing where their motivations are coming from and trying not to take it personally. And that becomes a personal practice in and of itself. Like when I notice that the reason that my mom thinks that I should wear long sleeve shirts is because she thinks she should wear long sleeve shirts, it allows me to experience compassion for her so that I'm not sitting in this space of like finger pointing, how dare you put your baggage on me? I'm like, I get it. And then you can start to reflect that experience to them. But I feel like otherwise you just end up fighting with people for no reason or hating them. And everyone is just, every experience is valid, ultimately. Like, we're all just reacting to this experience of being alive. And I feel like the more that we can show compassion to the way that everyone is having that experience, the better off we'll be. I hope that answered your question.
Thank you.
Okay.
Hello.
So, sometimes your goal in life is to be happy, content with yourself and everything. But sometimes I feel like I project certain qualities or characteristics or feelings to certain people. So how do you deal with that, sense of being fake? Like, it's not you being fake, you know, but in a way it's like I act different with certain people. I feel like, which one am I really?
Whew, man. This is, first of all, everybody in this room knows what you're talking about. Like, being, especially if you have to do it for work or for, like, anything where your money is tied up in it, or, like, or maybe you have to do it, frankly, to stay safe, like, wherever you are. Perhaps you live in a place where people are openly discriminatory toward you, and just putting up a kind of facade is a safety measure. And I think that when you encounter the fact that you're wearing a mask, the most important thing to do is to not start to hate yourself for wearing that mask and try to understand why you feel compelled to wear it. And then you can see, then you can start to take it off. Because, like, otherwise, you start to think that the mask is really your face. And I think there are, having seen this, because what you're talking about, I have seen in every yoga community that I've visited across the planet. And I really think that it's important for us to understand that we have legitimate motivations for the things that we do. And the reason that we get into a bad space about it is because we're passing judgment on ourselves. And we're hating ourselves for not being the way that we think we should be. But again, like, I think there are reasons why we wear masks. Like, sometimes it makes it, especially, like, let's say, as a person who's very antisocial and deals with anxiety issues, in order to even be in front of y'all, I have to put up some kind of defense. Because otherwise, I promise you, I could not do this. But knowing why I put on that defense and knowing why this is happening, it makes all the difference. It allows me to take it off and to say, this isn't really who I am. And I can accept, because once you start to see why you're wearing the mask, then you start to see the things that you feel compelled to cover up. Because it's like, why do I want to cover these aspects of myself? Maybe it's, I could run down a list. But understand and be compassionate toward the mask, then you can take it off. I hope that answered your question.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
It was not really a question. It's more like a comment.
So,
I just want to say thank you for the session, because as a person that is singled out a lot of how I look, it kind of touched me in a way. From how I was raised to people I'm around with a lot, it kind of helped me out through the day and through the rest of my life. So I want to thank you for it.
Thank you.
Hi, so you sort of touched on the topic of feeling good about yourself, but I wanted to have more in depth of feeling, like, just feeling good enough for yourself and others, because people struggle with that.
Right. Like how feeling good about yourself can affect others?
More of like, how do you work on making yourself be good
number
enough.
One.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just like noticing, okay. So one thing that I talk about this in the book a little bit, but it's really kind of the foundation of everything for me, is this idea of how do I look versus how do I feel. So I notice that I ask how do I look way more often than I ask how do I feel. And I value the response to how do I look higher than how do I feel. Because the only person who can tell you how you feel is you. And the example that I always think of is like putting on clothes. So like if I put on an outfit and I'm like, I feel like I look sickening, right? Like I look, this is awesome. I feel great. It's making me happy. I feel great. Then I go out and I see how other people are reacting to my outfit. And then that changes the way that I feel about my outfit. But the way that I felt about it is how I felt about it. And that should be more important than, because everybody's going to have an opinion. Everybody is going to, forever, everyone is going to have an opinion about everything that you do. And it's about remembering that the feeling that comes up for you, that sensation, is way more important than anything else. And that as you start to value how do I feel over how do I look, I think that that is really what makes the shift. That answer your question?
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Oh, okay. I'm getting the stop. I think I could do one more question. So I'm going to turn here. Hello.
First of all, thank you so much for everything.
Thank you.
And, well, I recently have learned, like, this might sound dumb, but, like, you, like, being the person that, like that I am and, like, that all of you are, like, we, like, I always tend to push myself down, and I'm pretty sure that many of you guys could relate to that. And, like, what I've learned is that, like, we only have ourselves for our whole lives, so we have to be there for ourselves. Being as like a young lady or like for women, like, or like, or like going in like to be a woman, like a woman and like an industry, like in like society, what is like one advice that you would say to not let people push you down or let yourself push you down?
Oof. The thing that if I could go back in time and speak to myself, the thing that I would say, and I wouldn't listen to me because I was hard-headed and wouldn't listen to Marty McFly, Jessamine. But I absolutely would just be like, stop listening to other people. Do not listen to other people. It is so easy. I understand that there are people who will give you excellent advice. There are people who will mentor you, who will lead the way. And when it's time to listen, you will know to listen. But generally speaking, I think if we're talking about women especially, we rely way too much on the opinions of other people. Like everything is about what somebody else thinks of you. And my thought is just stop thinking about it. If somebody gives you their opinion, take it and move on. Do not sit up here obsessing over how someone else is affected by you. Because not because it doesn't matter, but because they're literally doing the same thing with you. Like other human beings are literally trying to get, we're all trying to impress each other, you know? It's like we're in a gunfight with each other. And it's so unnecessary. And the way to break that chain, I think, is just stop listening to other people. Value your own opinion, number one, and always push forward. If it feels good, go with it. Obviously, there are times when that will not be the case, but you'll know when it's time, when that's not the case. It's better to start from that point.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank y'all. Thank you. I am going to be signing books, I think, after this in the place where there's books. So come through. Otherwise, may the force be with you. See you later. Bye. Thank you.